home. We are WNST. Tassel, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We are positively in Parkville. I know I have more than the Pac-Mans. Yes, I have the Gold Rush 7 Doublers from the Maryland Lottery. We're at Pabst in Parkville. We're at the corner of Taylor Avenue, right around between Lock Raven and Paring Parkway. Easy enough for my next guest to get here, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions and Jiffy Lube, putting us out on the road so I can visit with old friends and foes. I love Barry Stitz, and I've been chasing him down for about 2 years, shouting you out. I've said bad things about you in the air, trying to get you out. I said, you're ducking me, Stitz. You're ducking me, Stitz. But here you are. It's so good to see you.
Happy to be here.
First things first, Curly and this background and all that, he and I played Little League together against each other as rivals, 1978 and 79. In the Eastwood Little League. He was a Yankee, which makes you a bad guy right away. Tell me about your Yankees team. Who was the coach of that team?
I don't know if you remember Frank Michael.
Mr. Frank, yeah, absolutely. I remember him.
My dad helped him coach as well. And
you played shortstop.
I played shortstop, did a little pitching. And funny, because I grew up near Little Flower, and I was a year too young to play for their team, and they wouldn't let you play up.
Yeah, you were not from the neighborhood. Yeah. That's why you played.
My dad worked with Frank Michaels, and –
So well, the Eastwood Little League in that awesome. Time was, it was the best little league in East Baltimore.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Six teams in every age group.
It was premier. There was a lot of people. And you spent your whole life in youth sports after playing Hall of Famer. I looked you up, man. I was like, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Curly. But Curly's been in the news. You got a young man playing Major League Baseball right now, right?
Tyler Locklear doing a great job. Was back at Curly. I'm the director of development, so main job is to raise money.
Keep you on. Yeah, go ahead, sure.
Main job is to raise money. But on the side, I would help out, do a weight training class. And he was happened to be in the weight training class and just worked his butt off in there. And you knew, you know, watching the games, the way that ball jumped off his bat. And he had a good college career as well. And great to see him get an opportunity.
You are a hell of an athlete as well, and you were a try-hard guy. And you're coaching soccer, and I get so many direct. I mean, talk about Frank Michael. I had John Rollo and Mark Carroll Cask come out and do the show earlier this year, and we shouted you out. We didn't want you around anyway because you played for the Yankees and you beat us back in Little League. But your pathway from Curly to being a professional athlete in your own right with the blast and the spirit, you came back into my life at that period of time. But I want to bring up a name that I'm going to let you expound upon because you knew him, you loved him, I had a mutual love for him as well. One of my very first sponsors in 1992, when I started the show in 91, Kenny Albert did the show this week, and he talked about going out and getting sponsors for the Skipjacks back then. I didn't know a lot of people that in business. I mean, I'm a Dundalk kid. You know that. I mean, we've known each other our whole lives. So in 1991, I'm going to start this radio show. And I, by the way, we're at Pappas. I don't want to hold this crab cake up because it's so – you get the crab cake? I'm going to send you home with one. I'm going to send you home with
one.
I'm gonna give, thanks, John. Appreciate that. 1991-92, I had to make a list. And I'm going through this right now because I'm in a sales period with my documentary and stuff. And I had a book with everybody I knew who owned a business that I could knock on their door. And I didn't know many people. I went down to Squires. I went over to Norris Ford. I'm from Dundalk. I went to Dundalk places. And the one person I knew that had a business was Pepe Perella. And Pep had had Peppers. Where I had never been because I was underage, you know, to go in a place like that. It was a restaurant, but it wasn't my side of town. And I would go over to the Hacienda over in that side of town. But Pepe had opened a place called Pepperoni's Pizza up on Bel Air Road, right around the corner from where the McDonald's is now at Moravia, a little north of Lauraville. And he said, come on in. And I'll make you shrimp and shrimp scampi pizza. We'll put that on special on Fridays. And Pepe gave me $75 a week and free pizza. And he became one of my first three sponsors ever. And he's just one of my favorite people. And I know he touched your life, and you literally have jumped into his shoes, right? Literally, right? I mean, and I couldn't have you on today without at least beginning with Pep, because I think Pep was just such a special guy.
Pep's one of those guys, and you don't hear about this too often, but nobody had a bad word to say about him. I took over for him in 2000 when we returned to Curly after I was done playing soccer, And, you know, sometimes when somebody's, you know, taking over a program, you know.
Yeah, he knows you as a kid. Right, he knew you when you were 12 years old.
And he couldn't be more helpful in showing me the ropes, things, how things go with high school soccer. It was pretty new to me, and how things worked around Curly. I can remember I was even over there a couple times to watch games. I helped out a little bit with the JV prior to coming back to Curly when I was still playing. A buddy of mine had coached the JV. And you show up for practice, and here's Pep coming in. He's got a – handing out subs to kids. He's, you know, he's got old jerseys and things hanging out.
God, he had such energy, right?
He had a lot of energy, and he's one of the most generous people I've ever met in terms of, unfortunately, one of the kids that had played for him, Curly grad, had passed away in a freak accident, a boating accident, and school and the family wanted to raise money to start a scholarship. Well, they had some big bull roast over at Curly, and Pep did everything pro bono, you know, because he also did catering on the side.
Sure. Well, and, didn't you get involved with catering with him with lunches and stuff? Was one point, was he doing that at Curly?
He was.
I do remember that. Okay.
So he had the pepperonis, which was a gourmet pizza, crab meat on everything. Unbelievable. Then he had Pepper's Cafe right there on Blair Road, a little bar.
And he reopened restaurant. that after that.
Yep. And then, you know, he got into the catering, and he was doing a lot of the Catholic schools in the area. And I think he had a couple swim clubs and things like that. But just salt of the earth, man, generous, flew under the radar, never wanted recognition, and not going to find a better human being.
Well, I wanted to talk about Pepe because, yeah. I mean, you have followed in his footsteps with this Curly thing. I haven't had you on in the modern era. I got great pictures. I think I put you in the documentary from back in the day because we had pictures out at the barn. And you and I traveled together with the Spirit and Kenny Cooper and Mick, you know, everything that went on with you as a soccer player. Give me your journey the last 20 years. Now, we lost your dad, did we?
We did, about 7 years ago.
I remember when we lost your dad, and I think I reached out to you at that point or tried to reach out to you. But you're not in my phone, and I don't see you, and I'm not over at Curly, and I'm not a Curly grad, although everybody on my Facebook page is, but your name comes up all the time because there's a Curly guy manages Pappas here. There's Curly people everywhere. Yep. You really went back and created a life in giving back to people just like yourself and the way your father did that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's amazing. Quick little story how I ended up back at Curly. I was still playing the indoor soccer, and I was looking to transition. I was 30 years old.
Now, how many years? You played 9 years professional?
Eight years.
Okay.
92 to 2000, and my wife was pregnant. I was looking to make that transition, and during my last season, the president of Curly had called me and asked me to be on – Pep had said he was stepping down and asked me to be on the search committee for the new coach. I said, sure. Go over there. I'd like to be a part of that. And Curly proud. And we're sitting down there. We got about 7-8 guys, all Curly alums, the athletic director, and we're going through resumes. And was surprised that there weren't more given the program. They were just come off winning a championship that year, and they were going through. And actually, probably the best candidate on paper was a Calvert Hall grad.
So no, we're doing that.
There's no way that's happening. So I got the wheels spinning a little bit and thought, well, you know, if I can do something, I'd love to coach over here and transition. I was college grad and teach and all that.
So anyway, I mean, all your teammates were working for the bank, right? Tariq and all that. I mean, Ed really
– He did a good
look,
job.
Man,
and I did that for a year.
My love for Ed program. And a lifetime of friendship with Ed. Ed cared about the soccer players and understanding, like, I can only pay you 20, 30. You know, you're like, you're not going to be Adley Rutschman playing soccer for the Blast of the Spirit.
Yep.
But he tried to set all of you up to have
a position when you were done playing. So, and I did that program for summer, and, you know, it just wasn't, you know, up my alley.
You weren't a banking guy. Yeah.
So, anyway, with
Dieter was. It just
Dieter
worked
was.
Out.
Ed, right. Tariq Walker, Lance Johnson, Ed. We was great with those guys.
Good people, too.
Offering an opportunity. So, anyway, make a long story short, that worked out. My first year, I taught and coached. It was assistant AD. And then the current position I'm in, the gentleman had left. They asked me to interview for it. Being an alum, that's a position that you want alumni in, fundraising and raising money for the school. So, I've been doing that for the last 23 years in coaching.
He's a salesman. Fundraising.
It's you know what, Curly is a great school. It's you know, in a day and age now where, you know, you look at all the Catholic schools around in Baltimore City that have shut down. You know, Curly's doing well, and all boys. We have about 530.
That's why I didn't go. You know, and, my parents wanted me to go to Curly. Now, I'm not going to be anti-Curly here. I'll give you a hard time. But my parents, when I was at Holabird, I was a little younger. I'd skipped a grade. My parents gave me the option, you know, like they're like, hey, because Dundalk was transitioning. I was supposed to go to Kenwood. Everybody in my neighborhood, Colgate, went to Kenwood in the 70s, and they changed the zoning to go to Dundalk. Now, in Archie Bunker's Dundalk, then that meant Turner Station. People freaked out. It's 1981. People still freaking out. My parents said, you want to go to Mount Carmel? And I'm like, there's like 20 kids here. Yeah. And then like they're like, you want to go to Curly? I'm like, how am I going to meet girls if I go to Curly? They're like, well, that's what Catholic High's for. I'm like, nah. I'm going to Dundalk High. And now, you know, the only Hall of Fame I can brag. I'm only in one Hall of Fame, Dundalk High Hall of Fame. I don't deserve to be, but I'm in the Dundalk High Hall of Fame. The Curly thing's different than Dundalk, though, right? Like, I grew up with Curly people in my life forever. One of my big brothers on my block, we lost him recently, Frank DeBilius. Frankie D was maybe 15 or 16 in 1973, 1974, 1975. I was 5, 6, 7 years old. I come home from school. Frankie would play basketball with me in the neighborhood. He was a Curly guy. So I started hearing about Curly when I was 5 years old. I'm like, what's a Curly? It was a funny name because Curly was on Three Stooges. Yep. I don't know if you know that or not. Yeah. So when you're 5 years old, yep. Curly's Three Curly, Stooges, yep. Right? But, I mean, Catholic faith, I'm confirmed and baptized at Our Lady of Fatima. Everybody at Fatima went to Curly, right? I mean, literally, it was like a feeder school at that point. So on the east side of town, Curly's this institution that I think in a lot of other places wouldn't still exist in the way that Seton Keough or IND, you know, these schools, we Towson Catholic.
Cardinal Gibbons.
What makes Curly special at this point?
Well, I think it's the Franciscan Friars, you know, and, you know, they're the school is an archdiocesan school, but the Franciscan Friars have staffed it since it opened up in 1961.
61 was the first year, okay.
And in those days, geez, you know, probably when it first opened, you might have had 30 friars at the school. Just like at the Catholic schools, you had nuns and
sure, and
things like that. But just, you know, built on the tradition of St. Francis and doing for others. And I think that's a charism that's at the school. And, you know, part of our mission is to build great men. You know, and that's what this world needs.
I know a lot of great people who went to Curly.
There you go.
I don't tell them that publicly other than Stitch. I would say this. I've been in your school. We used to go to the dances, you know, back in the 80s, you know.
Yes.
And that's where the Catholic High girls would come in. It was back in the early 80s. Because all my buddies went to Robert DeBilius. I mean, lots and lots. The Stolba family. A lot of Colgate people went to Curly. And the daughters went to Catholic or Mount Carmel, one or the other, but they weren't going to Dundalk or Kenwood, right? So we had families in the neighborhood that went. I had only been in the school, well, maybe 5 dances as a kid, and then I went over for a basketball game when Tamir Goodman played.
Remember that? Yes.
I mean, the gym was packed.
I got turned away.
So much for an alum.
I think it was
so much for an alum.
It was a Sunday afternoon.
It was a Sunday afternoon.
Bill Dawson, I was the AD there.
I mentioned Three Stooges. I was like, Curly. I was like, press, let me in, you know. But it was crazy in there.
Yes.
And we lost Coach Pop, too, right?
Yes.
Now, you know, I love his daughter. I've known her whole life. And Coach Pop, this goes back to me being the high school writer at the paper. 86 to 92. That's how I knew Pepe. I didn't even bring that up. Mm-hmm. I knew Pepe because of the rivalry with Calvert Hall and Bill up there and Karpovich. And you were such rivals. And I covered what year did you graduate?
87.
So I didn't cover you. I covered maybe 89, 90, 91. Mm-hmm. You were gone. Mm-hmm. You were Towson at the time.
Towson,
that's
yep.
where you were a little younger than me, but you were Towson. I covered, that's why I called Pepe, because I didn't know anybody that owned businesses, but Pepe was a guy that owned a business who coached sports. And so I was in that, I covered some games outside, but I had been in your school once for a basketball game in the gym at the turn of the century, whenever Tamir played. 5 times in the 1980s, chasing girls at dances with bands. Gaz was playing. Gaz played everything.
Appaloosa.
Yeah, Appaloosa and Gaz. That's it. They played everyone. Yeah. Appaloosa or Gaz didn't play your dance. You didn't have a dance. I think there were 10 bands called that. I'm making that up, but it's true. Gaz played her prom, too. I went into school. I don't know if you were there. McGinty was there that day. I think you were there that day. I had a salesman who was an alum that took me over to your school for a day or something. And I went into the school, and this is my honest opinion. This is in the last decade this has happened. I had never walked in. I was there during school, during like a Wednesday in class. I think I met with some people in your office about business or advertising Curly. And I walked through, and I'd never been in there. And I walked through. I'm like, this is kind of nice. You know, like I never knew it was in the building. It's a big brick building, you know, in the corner. I used to go over to the Hojoy Donuts around the corner from there. You know what I'm talking about. And I'd never been in, and I thought, this is nice. And I thought to myself, and this is, my kid's 39. He ain't going to Curly. Maybe his kids will. I don't know. But I thought I'd send my kid here. I mean, I literally, that's from my heart. I walked in there. I didn't know how nice it was. I don't know what I expected, but I'll say this too. Loyola College was another place I had never walked around. And when I walked around the inside, I'm like, this is nice. I should have gone here instead of UB. What is the Curly experience now for people? What are you selling kids on and parents and the affordability, playing soccer, playing sports? The school's still doing well, right?
The school's doing well. Steady enrollment and made some. We just got off of a $7 million capital campaign where we air conditioned the whole building. Which is obviously.
I must have been there on a day when it wasn't hot, you know.
But, you know, it's a solid school, and I guess, you know, you got great role models there, teachers. You talked a little bit about Pep Perella, you know, when you think of Dan Popra, Coach Patry. I don't know if you remember Coach Patry, he was the old football coach.
Didn't
he
know.
Some characters. And, you know, the school, again, it's about giving kids an opportunity to not just get a great education, but to have a great four-year experience. And I saw it with my own sons. Two of them have already graduated. My youngest is a rising junior.
I remember when they were born. Being a young parent.
Today we dropped off my middle son to BWI Airport. He's going to Air Force Academy, going to play hockey. They got their six-week basic.
You and Dieter had hockey kids, didn't you?
Yeah,
soccer
well,
guys and hockey kids.
Mine's a little bit different. My oldest son, Ben, right, he's playing for FC Cincinnati 2 right now, which is kind of like Norfolk for the Orioles, the second team. Well, I obviously, first son, you know, you're coaching everything and whatever. I think my middle son didn't want any parts of dad coaching him.
Soccer.
Soccer. So let's hockey. I mean, think about when we were growing up. Hockey, where's hockey in Baltimore, you know, at that time? Maybe at Mount Pleasant or somewhere else. Well, it's
I grew up in East Baltimore. You go to Patterson Park and pick it a pickup game in the bubble, but ice hockey was not available to us as kids. It really wasn't.
So, you know, that's when he started, and he did all the sports, but he had a love for hockey. I love it. It's a great, for me, it's a great kind of reprieve from soccer all the time. And
you're an Oriole guy, though, big time, right?
Big time Oriole.
See, I know you as a baseball player, and then you came along later in life as this soccer star. Like, your name started showing up in the Sun in 86 when I worked there. And I'm like, there can only be one Barry Stitz, Curly, Towson. There's got to be this guy. And then you wind up playing soccer. You were a different kind of kid like me where you played soccer, you played baseball. I don't know if you played football or basketball, whatever else you played. But soccer became your thing. Mm-hmm. I guess 12, 13, 14? Were you soccer exclusive?
Well, right after my freshman year, I played JV baseball my freshman year, and basically what determined it, you could get away. I was a late bloomer physically. So as a freshman, I was 5 foot nothing going into Curly. And soccer's, again, a sport where, you know, it doesn't hurt to be big, but, you know, you can figure it out with baseball. You know, it's just a little bit, didn't have that strength. You move up to the 90-foot
diamond. Which your dad wasn't a soccer guy, though, right?
No, he was all baseball.
I mean, I knew your dad, and, like, my dad was not a soccer guy. But he liked the blast, but we didn't play the game. Mm-hmm. Like, the game of soccer in my neighborhood, you had to be from the city or from Highland Town, be around Pete Carinci, being around those guys to play. There was no soccer or lacrosse in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. My neighborhood was a baseball neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Everybody played baseball. And that's why a guy your age, you and me playing Little League baseball together, that you went on a soccer track. That's just...
That's why you remember I grew up near Little Flowers, Heron Run Park there. So Heron Run Park was a hotbed for sports in general, right? You had a million baseball fields,
A lot of girls playing softball there, too.
Yeah. Tim Whitman in that area, Chris Reef. You just had a ton of talent that grew up playing. Again, you had the Holland Town and Little Flower. And back in those days, you didn't have club sports, right? You played for your school. Even if you were a public school kid, you still played for the Catholics. You know.
But also 82, 83, 84, you're in a point where the Colts left, right? You're younger, you know, and the soccer thing was
– at its heyday, right? The blast.
Wanting to play for the blast was something you could, as a 15-year-old, meet Kenny Cooper – see that other Tim Whitman, other local guys, Mangione, there were other young people here playing that sport, that there was a point for you that all your friends could gather and come down to the arena and watch you play. And they did. And, I mean, you had a lot of friends and family at the game, and that was the beauty of what made the blast in the spirit so endearing, I think.
Always had, over the years, from the beginning until even now, it always has that local flavor to
community.
It. Yep.
Community feel. Well, I didn't go to Curly. You know, I went to Dundalk, and you and I would have probably have.
My dad went to Dundalk. My mom and dad had gone to Dundalk.
Well, they're good people. They look how good he turned out. That's why he turned out so good. Barry Stitz is here. You're not the athletic director at Curly. You are the.
Director of Advancement.
Director of Advancement and soccer coach.
And soccer coach.
And you don't teach.
I don't teach.
You did teach for a while.
I taught a weight training class for 5 or 6 years.
Look,
just
that
to help
good.
Out.
Well, working.
Actually, since I stopped 5 years ago, I'm getting a little bit rounder. But
I'm going to get you a crab cake here at Pappas to do that,
that'll
too.
Help. That'll help, won't it?
We're all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I want to give some love out. I got to give some Gold Rush 7 doublers away here. It's taken me years to get Stitz out here to do the program. You and I were younger over at the barn. I have these great pictures of you and I together. And I think Chris Vaccaro was in the picture with you there. That part of your life and that point where watching Mike Stankovic be this incredible player, then him being your coach, watching Kenny Cooper be this legendary guy, and I still think of that time the plane took off and we got stuck at the U.S. Air and Kenny was beaten on the counter.
Broke his watch.
We represent the city. We represent the people of Baltimore. How could you do this to us? Yeah, it's pretty good. So, The notion that soccer in this town and moving it out to Towson and all that, where's soccer? Because, and I saw Petey Karenji last weekend. He was supposed to come out last week. Pete, I'm looking for you. Pete will come out. He's doing soccer camps this summer. I talked to him a little bit about this and where soccer was. And he would always say to me, you're always supporting soccer, Nasty. You always support soccer. And I'm thinking, there wasn't a lot of soccer talk on WBA. No offense to Patty or anybody. Like, soccer was one of those things that was a little engine that tried harder. And for a guy like you to be into soccer, in a neighborhood where there were some soccer players, looking up to the Blast and them being here probably helped. You, if the Blast never came, there might not have been a soccer for a lot of people here, right? I mean,
absolutely. High school would have been the end of it for a lot of guys, you know, and or even, to have the opportunity to move into college. Unfortunately, Towson doesn't have a team anymore. But, you know, what Pete's done at UMBC, again, built teams around a lot of local guys. Frank Oshesky, longtime Towson coach.
Sure.
So, you know, that was, and then what you mentioned Loyola earlier and University of Baltimore. You know, go back.
What, champions.
34, yeah, national
people
champions.
Remind you.
And
yeah.
What a rivalry. And I think when
Sonny
you have those
rivalries, let's go.
It's good for the sport.
Well, I would also think for you with the players that played, Stankovic, Kenny Cooper, those guys come along, and then you played for almost a decade with Rusty Troy. I'm just thinking of all the names. Dougie Neely and relationships all these years later. I know Ed tries to bring some people together, and there's a Hall of Fame and all that stuff. You and Dieter, I think of you as frickin' frack. Are you still close?
We very much are.
I figured you guys were best friends 30 years ago. But 30 years ago, I'm not best friends with the same people I was best friends with 30 years ago. But your soccer community and what held that thing together and those people, I relish those times. I loved broadcasting your games with Ted Patterson and Gary Stein and calling the games and going on the road with you guys. It was the one sort of official broadcasting thing I ever did. And Kenny beating on that table down at BWI and saying, we represent the community, we represent the people of Baltimore. He believed that was in his soul in a way that I don't see that with the Orioles and the Rays. You know, like this is a place Lamar works. It's not a place Lamar wants to be. Right, if he wanted to be here, he'd be. And I think it was different for all of you. And I'll bring Drew into this and everybody that got involved with camps that taught you how to be good people, working at the bank, everything about soccer locally different than Ronaldinho or Messi or Neymar. Like, it was all about humility and community, and it probably built you to be able to do this thing with kids over at Curly.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, all the guys I played with were grounded. And believe me, Mike Stankovic, I'd be down at arena. There was 11,000 people there, and you'd see Mike Stankovic. And he was a world-class player at that time, all-star. And now all of a sudden, I'm playing with him and coaching. And
he was tough.
Coach, and he was hard as nails. But, he, you know.
Really hard
great,
as nails.
Yeah,
like, really European tough in a way that just and I saw that when he coached the team and Kenny left. I'm like, wow, this is a serious MF-er. He came from a war-torn country. I love Mali, you know what I mean? But to have idols that then become your coach, very quickly for a young guy that I knew you when we were 13, 14, would have been a big deal for me to be running around playing for Kenny Cooper. It was a big deal for me to be broadcasting, to be honest with you, all those years later, because I took the blast seriously. And the community part of it, I think, is what made it maybe the last thing that's ever going to be like that. Yeah, you know, the, literally,
we were everywhere.
Sort of the last thing that's
We were at birthday parties. We were at fairs, the Heritage Fair.
I'll be there this weekend in the beer garden. Right?
We were everywhere. We were at schools. We were playing the soccer volleyball against the PTA. You name it, we were there. I mean, and you know what? In that day and where soccer was then, you got to remember the MLS, which is now the big
didn't
league,
exist.
Didn't
yeah.
exist.
Yeah.
It came around, I think, 1995. So I was 3 or 4 years into it. So.
And you were dreamed of trying to get a gig in that league, right? Probably would have been paid a little more at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
and you loved outdoor. You were an outdoor player.
But once you play, you know, you almost get stereotyped a little bit. We had a lot of guys in our league would play the indoor, and then they would go
absolutely.
And play outdoor. That's what you had to do
to make a living.
At the early stage, to make a living. And then when MLS came around, it was one or the other. Now you could still play outdoor in the summer months, but a little bit of a lesser league. But guys made a good living. And you remember, you know, certainly when I played, it wasn't the heyday of the league. Right,
sure.
But it was still, when it was the only league around, the best players were all playing it. You're talking about guys like Bronco Sagoda, Eric Rasmussen, Tattoo, Drago.
Jungle.
You know, all those guys. And, you know, again, they were on the latter stages of their career. But, I mean, to play against those guys, Tattoo, you know.
When Julie V shows up on my timeline, I know, you know, I've been living right. When Kai Hoskovy shows up on my timeline. Sepp Gatenhammer.
Hector. In his early years. But you mentioned, like, Chris Vaccaro. You know, he was a perfect. Here's a guy, I don't know how old he was at the time, but he was probably in his later 30s when I'm, you know, 21 years old playing. And the way he carried himself, he taught you how to be a professional. Maybe we weren't getting paid like a professional baseball player or football player and things like that.
But you're not in college anymore,
you're
right?
Not in college anymore. And you got to have a quick, funny story. One of the funniest stories, if I had played baseball or in the NFL, I'd have a top-selling, you know, top seller in a book, you know,
right.
Memoirs on stories. So we're playing in Canton. Did you have the opportunity to go to Canton?
It was a bubble. It was a bubble rink that was all glass. It was glass.
No, that was Dayton.
Dayton.
That was Dayton. Right?
Okay.
So this was Canton. So you might not have had a pleasure. We'd go there a couple times.
Go ahead.
So anyway, we go down. We always go on a Sunday night. The town was, from what I know, Canton, you know, it's pretty much people are there during the week working, but nobody's there on the weekend. So anyway, we're playing in Canton. And Chris was always, you know, he
colorful. Yeah,
colorful.
Yeah.
He dressed well. You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't make enough money to dress that well. And he would dress well. And he, again, carried himself like a professional. So we play the game. And after the game, you know, we're showering, getting dressed. And you would always have a locker room attendant that would lock it up, give you the key.
Right.
And then you go in at halftime, unlock the door. And after the game, well, he's getting all dressed. Well, you know, he has one of them Steven Seagal leather jackets.
Yeah, yeah, full body, right?
Well, it's gone. Right? So he's beside me.
Where's my jacket?
So Drew was there. He gets the general manager. The guy's apologizing up and down. We'll find it. We'll have it. Probably a mistake. A real mistake, right? So but we'll find it and we'll send it to you, right? So a few weeks go by. You know, Chris is checking.
Where's my jacket?
We're going to send you a check for it. How much it cost? Probably $800 jacket at the time, right? We're going to send you a check. Another few weeks, no check, right? We end up going back to Canton, right? We go out, we're on the field.
That guy Paxos owned that team, didn't he?
He did before he became commissioner.
That guy was a loon.
So anyway, we're warming up on the field, right? And the goalkeepers go down in the goal, and they're doing their thing, warming up. We're running across the field, kicking balls. I look. Well, down in the goal, Chris is catching balls, and he's throwing them and kicking them and all that. Well, behind him, hanging up on the net, on a hanger, is a suit, jacket. He's got it hanging up in the on the field.
He wouldn't put it in the locker room.
Their general manager, what's he doing? What the hell is he doing? He can't do that. He's making us look bad. What's he? He had to check after the game.
Chris Vaccaro. Yeah. I got to get Chris on the program.
He's awesome.
It's great to visit with
Jersey.
You. So how can we help Curly? What's the speech in regard to raising money or getting a young man of the 7th, 8th grade? We got people out there with parents. What's the elevator speech to come and be a part of Curly?
I think the advertisement is look around and ask people. You know, you see Curly grads are out there doing a lot of good things, and it's a great school. It's an investment parents make, you know, in terms of tuition. But our kids are going on to do great things, and you know what? They're better prepared for life, and I think as a parent, that's what you're looking for. you know, so again, if you have a fifth, sixth, seventh grade boy, and you're looking a little bit towards the future, you know, come over to school, come to a soccer game, watch the soccer game, see how our fans are in the stand and the students, and then you come over for an open house and you see what it's like.
I don't want anybody to think I'm being soft on Curly because Stitz is here, but I'll say this, and everybody knows Calvert Hall, you know. My son went to Perry Hall. He went to the Hall. Perry Hall, not Calvert Hall. So the Calvert Hall thing and the Loyola thing, because they cancel each other out. And Loyola's had me MC their charity basketball game at Christmas time. And then there's the Mount St. Joe types. I had one of those here earlier. Patty was here. I don't claim any of you. I mean, literally any of these schools. But I do feel a kinship with Curly. Because I almost went. It's my side of town. All my buddies went there. So if Curly's playing Calvert Hall, as an example, I'm non-denominational, but I want you to win.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like I and I don't want to say I never want Calvert Hall to win, but the Calvert Hall, it's the pain in the ass of the alumni. Whatever the alums are the biggest pain to me, they're the ones I don't want to win. So Calvert Hall and Loyola, I'll start with you two because you beat each other up and you fight all the time. You know, I get my rocks on not liking Patapsco. That's what I get as a Dundalk guy. But Curly, I'm non-denominational. I root for you guys.
And
you're like the little engine that could to me, you know?
Although, you know, I don't want to get any grief, but all the schools are good, right? And the thing you talk about, that elevator pitch, thing that separates us, we're 530, 540 boys, right? So that's half the size of a Calvert Hall.
I didn't know
a lot
that.
Less,
okay.
Right? So
well, you are the little engine. Yeah. Then I have that right. You
yeah,
are
yeah,
a smaller
yeah.
school.
So we're that smaller school, but we're still big enough to offer all the AP classes and compete athletically, obviously. Which
What's
is
AP
important.
Class?
for the smart kids.
Oh, okay. All right. Advanced placement.
Advanced placement, yeah.
Ah, so we called that GATE back in, gifted and talented.
Yeah.
Not that I was one of them, but yeah, we gifted and talented.
Yep,
advanced
so.
Placement.
Yep, so we have, you know, again, our kids are going to the top schools, just like the kids are at those other schools.
How's your soccer team?
We're very good. We're very good. I mean, we're consistent, you know. We're always there in the mix. You know, it's tough when you're going against schools like McDonough and Loyola and Calvert Hall that are bigger in size and have more kids coming in. And we're in a city which, unfortunately, sometimes isn't the, you know, people right away hear, hey, they're in the city. You know, that it's not.
Well, I don't buy into that. I'm Baltimore positive.
You know what? We're 5 minutes off of 95, and that's one of our strengths as well. We're drawing from all over the place. We're in Arundel County,
oh,
Harford
really?
County.
Okay, I didn't
We've
know that.
We've got some coming from, you know, that Towson corner.
I always tell the story. My parents tried to sell me to McDonough one time. I'm like, you do know McDonough's over there and Dundalk's over here, and I ain't doing that every day.
Yeah, on 695.
Yeah, it was
right?
5 minutes of that before the Curly and the Mount Carmel thing happened for me. But I soccer itself, and I guess I got to this 20 minutes ago, and I stopped on it. Your dad was a baseball guy. You fell in love with soccer. Your dad had to drag you out to soccer fields. There was places to do it in the neighborhood and be a part of that. The modern soccer thing, as well as the modern lacrosse, baseball, this year-round, we got pitchers, kids blowing their arms out, getting Tommy John. Soccer, I know there was concern about head trauma and heading the ball in practice, and why would you want that kind of head trauma? Soccer, from a youth standpoint, when you're seeing kids now that are coming through your program, these are soccer-only kids, right? We're in a different world where if you get a good player, a star player that may go play for Anthony over at UMBC, or a guy like yourself or like Dieter, right, of that caliber, that's a kid that's been playing soccer exclusively from the time they're probably 7 or 8 years old, right?
I mean, absolutely.
And that was not Barry. That was not Nestor. That was not Dieter. That was not – none of us did that. We were three-sport. And it's like the level of commitment on an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old kid to say, love soccer so much you're going to live it 12 months a year. I don't know. I wouldn't want that for my grandkid. I wouldn't want that. It's a different world we're in now with, I think, also Title IX and scholarships as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, the reality, I don't like it. I grew up, again, playing all the sports. But the reality of it is if you have, you know, kid A playing a sport year-round and kid B is playing it 3 or 4 months out of the year, you know, it's hard to –
Kid A's going to make the varsity.
Right? You know, it's tough.
Yeah.
Having said that, you know, I think the kids should play the multiple sports. You just got to realize you can't play all the sports at the highest level. And for a really good athlete, that's hard to say,
pick
hey.
One.
Right. Well, you can play soccer and you can play club and play it year-round, but I'm also going to play basketball or baseball, but I'm going to play it at the in-house level, right? Because, you know what, if there's a conflict, I can miss that in-house basketball game without the whole team and all the parents being mad because I'm not there, you know. And it really stinks. It stinks that kids have to make that decision. I think, you know, there's kids still doing multi-sports, but I think you start getting at a high school age and everybody's looking for the college scholarships and things like that, that, you know, they're being forced to pick, you know, so.
Well, I don't say the innocence is lost on it, you know what I mean? Because we all had a good time playing, but it didn't feel like a vocation when I was playing you in Little League in Eastwood. You know, it didn't feel like when we lost, we were going to go into the batting cage and work 10 months to come back and beat you next year when you're 11. Mm-hmm. And the soccer thing to me, specifically with clubs and travel and things that you'd say, we travel from Little Flower, we travel from Eastwood or whatever.
Going to Dundalk was a long ride for us, 20 minutes.
Yeah, right? And now, oh, we got a weekend tournament in Norfolk. Let's put the family and let's spend $500 in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a different level of commitment that my father wouldn't recognize this.
It's crazy. It is crazy. And, you know, people are doing it. As long as you have people doing it, and it's that fear of missing out. I'll tell you what the biggest thing that happens. In reality, I was playing soccer year-round, except it wasn't always organized, right? In the summer, you talk about my neighbor. We played up a place called Elmley Playground, right?
Right.
A basketball court without any hoops on it, and we were up there every day in the summer. So these kids now – technically, their technical ability is much higher. I'm speaking for soccer.
Sure.
Is much higher than when I had it, right?
Because they have the ball in their foot
often,
that's right?
That's right. But the only time a lot of these kids are playing, and again, maybe parents aren't comfortable with their kid leaving the house 9 o'clock in the morning and coming back at 6 o'clock at night, right?
They're not playing pickup at the park.
That's what we did.
It's all organized, is what you're saying.
We had a neighborhood of, you know, where you grew up and where I grew up where they weren't all A athletes, but everybody played sports, right?
And the big kids would beat the little kids up, teach them to be better. They were out there playing, right? Yeah.
And, you know, during the summer, we were playing basketball for a week, and then we burn out of that. Now we're playing soccer for a week. Then we're going down there and playing
wall ball.
Well,
in my neighborhood, it was Rob the Bees. What do we want to play today? We're going to play basketball, football, or baseball. And, hey, today we're going to play tag. Or today we're just going to go play Pac-Man at the mall. We're going to go roller skating or whatever. Like, it feels like a full-time job for a lot of kids to be on the pitch at Curly. As a 16-year-old, it feels like you got to start that at 8. It really in a full-time capacity. Not in a, we're just going to play September, October, November, go out there and freeze a little bit. That it's more intense, and I find that to be kind of sad from an experiential standpoint for me.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's no different for baseball, right? Fall baseball. Nobody heard of fall baseball back when I played. You know, you played soccer for those 4 months, right? And then you probably did an indoor session as the blast came into town, right? A lot of kids were playing basketball. And then you played baseball in the spring. And lacrosse, obviously, is growing. But that's what it was. If you ask anybody in our neighborhood, we played all three of those sports.
Last thing I'm going to leave you with this, because I'm looking over your shoulder and I'm seeing Denmark and Serbia and Denmark and Serbia. And they got a baseball game on from yesterday here, but I got soccer. Soccer's on 4 of the 6 TVs in my space here, right? That was not the case when little Barry Stitz and little Nestor Aparicio were in Eastwood Little League, when I was at the paper and you were at Curly, when I was at the other paper and you were at Towson, when I'm in the broadcast booth and you're on the field. Soccer was always an outlier, right? And that's the thing that when I get with old folks like you or Pete Carinci, they say to me, Nasty, you're the guy that's always been talking, 32 years on the radio, you always talk soccer. I never played soccer. I admit that. My father, it just wasn't in my neighborhood. Soccer's ubiquitous now, dude. Like, there was no chance in the world that in 1998, 99, when you and I were sitting at the barn, that there would be a soccer game on in Parkville on the television of any kind. It was not available in any way. And now we have Copa on, Euro on every television in here. We had U.S. playing the other night, right? Like, soccer is in the culture now. Whether it's Messi and kids wearing jerseys or wearing Neymar jerseys or whatever it would be, soccer it's arrived in a way for a guy like you that spent your life, and Pete, older than you, trying to dig it out. We won a championship at UB, soccer. What's soccer? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to that. Pele played here once. That was what soccer was 50 years ago. Now it's I was at Cooper's Pub the other day. I met Slancha and talk about EPL and 10 o'clock on 8 o'clock on Saturday mornings and people in the U.S. football teams playing football games in England on soccer pitches, which I've witnessed with my own eyes. I'm not saying you couldn't have convinced me of that in 1995, you know, when you were playing for the Spirit and the Blast, but it must be heartening that your thing came along. Soccer has arrived, especially for girls.
Yeah. And the reality of it is, in those times when we're saying it's not, you know, very popular here, it's not on TV. Well, everywhere else around the world, it was.
Well, we knew that.
And then it finally, you know, hit here. And you know what? All you need is a soccer ball.
It's a beautiful game.
All you need is a soccer ball to play, right? You don't need even goals. You can set up goals, but you don't need a lacrosse stick or a hockey stick or a baseball bat. All you need is a soccer ball, and, you know, anybody can play it. And
what did you love about it? What drew you to it? Because it wasn't your dad's thing.
No, nah, it
might not have been your best friend's thing. I mean, it was your thing, soccer, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, you know, I just think that, you know, you're not, you know, at any minute, the ball can be at your foot and you can make a difference in the game, right? You know, in baseball, you might have to wait till the ball's hit to you or you get at bat to make a difference. Here, you know.
It grabbed your attention more.
It did, yeah. And, you know, again, I was blessed to have a neighborhood where, you know, we had a good soccer team. You mentioned Jason Dieter. His dad coached me, you know,
right.
at 10 years old. You know, we had a lot of kids in the neighborhood that love soccer, so that was something we always did. And
how's my boy? Where's Dieter? How's he doing?
You know what? He's doing great.
He should have come and done the show with you today.
He backed out of my – I forced him for our Curly golf tournament. He's on the verge of having to get a knee replacement. He put it off a year. He got one of them plasma shots.
Could have been playing on that
knee.
On that carpet down at the arena all these years, right? How you doing? Your knees all right?
You know what? Knock on wood. I had one surgery about 10 years ago for meniscus, and other than that, I'm doing good.
Well, the good news is, and this is me picking on him, you weren't that fast. You didn't have to run that fast. You didn't hurt yourself.
And guess what?
If you'd have been faster, you'd hurt yourself.
That's right. That stitch, lack of speed gene, passed down from my dad
DNA
to me
DNA.
To my kids as well.
They're slow too?
They're slow too.
Well, he was a professional. This is Barry Stitz. You are the director of – give me the
advancement.
Advancement right. of – yeah. Is that it? Director of advancement.
That's director of advancement. It used to be director of fundraising.
I would never get that title.
And every 10 or 15 years, you get something fancier. So,
I would say Barry Stitz, soccer man, and still – much to my chagrin, the champion of the 1978 Little League as the Yankees. I'm still pissed at Richie Paff.
Well, I was just going to say.
Richie Paff. I've never met Richie Paff. I don't want to know Richie Paff. Can you get him on a show? I want him to come and tell the story.
The left end.
I wonder if he remembers striking
me
out.
He remembers.
No, he played minor league, but he had bigger strikeouts than striking me out.
He remembers. Those were the good old days. I matter of fact, I know the field.
Do you want me to tell the story?
Tell the story.
All right. So the story is.
I know the field right there. I mean.
I remember right by Patterson, right where the parking lot is.
You were on the third base bench. Your team, we were on the first base bench.
So what happened was, six inning game probably then. We're little. We're 11 years old. The Yankees were a really good team. And you had really good players, and you had a pitcher named Richie Paff who pitched in the Brewers organization later. Curly guy, right? Rich Paff, right?
Yep.
Left-handed, and he threw like smoke, man. It was like hitting off Koufax when you're 11.
And top of that, he didn't always know where it was going, so that put a little more into it.
That's why I was walked that day, and I got called on the third strike outside and low. I remembered. So we won. So it was like two halves. It was like 10 games in the first half, 10 games in the second half. It was a 6-team league. Yep. We played the Angels, the Indians, the Orioles, the other teams in the league. We were, I think, 9-1 in the first half, and you were 8-2, and we beat you or something. So we won the first half. So we were in the World Series, right? Mm-hmm. Second half comes. We were 8-1. You were 8-1 or whatever. The other team stunk. The Indians were awful. We 40 runs off of them. So we were in the last inning of the biggest game of the year. And Mr. Butch, I told Mark this, and I told John this. Like, Mr. Butch would be like, no getting in the pool today. We got a game today.
No wiffle ball.
I don't want you wearing yourselves out. We got a championship game today. And Mr. Butch, man, he would get us all in. And he would literally what he would do. Mr. Butch would look at us and he'd say, all right, guys, see Yankees over there. They put their pants on the same way you do. That's what he said. He said, they put their pants on the same way you do. And we're going to go out there today. So Mr. Butch gets us all fired up. Mark fires 5 innings of ball. He's out. No good. So whoever else we had pitching, I don't know. I'm trying to think of who else pitched for us. But Monty Otis probably pitched a couple
Mike
innings.
Monty Otis, yeah.
Playing guitar somewhere around the corner for you as well. And the bases were loaded. Paff's still pitching. He's 120 innings in, throwing pitches in.
130 pitches.
Throwing his arm out. Yeah. The bases were loaded, and I was up. And the season was on the line in that if I took a walk or somehow scored the run, you lose, we won both halves, and we win the World Series, right? All I had to do was get on, or not make an out. There's two outs, bases loaded. I'm a little nervous. I remember stepping out of the box and being a little bit of a jerk. 3-2. I took.
Wasn't it originally 3-0, and he come back and threw two strikes?
Maybe he did. I think because I had the bat on my shoulder.
Right,
I wasn't swinging the bat.
And he
bases are loaded.
He'd strike out 15 guys a game, but walk 10. So
I'm in there, and the ball was low and outside, and the umpire rung me up. And then the worst thing possible happened. I had to go pitch because we were like out of pitchers. We were out of innings or whatever it was, you know. So, like, now I had to go pitch. And we lost, you know. I mean, whatever. I don't even know. I don't think I pitched. We lost that game, and then we played you in the World Series and lost. And I'm still talking about it 46 years later because, like, the convergence of you and me and the fact that how much different my life would have been if that just was a called ball four. I wouldn't have the story to tell
And you're
anymore.
Still saying that was a ball. Well, it you was, remember, it wasn't. The umpires were parents and coaches from other teams that would volunteer their time. They didn't, you know, have the paid umpires.
Frank Michael was crooked. We all knew it. Butch told us, and he paid him. I'm making this up. But we had it. Man, we had fun. Little League was fun, man.
Was
we
fun.
Had great times on the East Side. And two kids from two different – you were in the city. I was in the county. I'm Dundalk. You're Curly. You're Little Flower. You know, like – but it brought people together. And those all-star games on those fields there.
How about the truck that sat on the hill? That after the game, you got a snowball. If you won, you got a snowball and a hot dog if you won. If you lost, you just got a soda.
50 cents, yeah. Well, if we won, Mr. Butch bought snowballs for everybody.
That's right.
You know, so $7 later, I got chocolate. Can I get marshmallow on that, Mr. Butch? You know, so, man, our childhood was great. Love you, man.
Love you. Too,
appreciate
man.
You, man.
You. Thanks Barry, for having me on.
Barry Stitz joining us here. All great men. All Barrys. Barry Stitz, Barry Trotz. My son, Barry, all the Barrys out there in the world doing good things. Good luck to you. Thanks for coming over, man.
You're welcome.
I've been pooping on you on the air. I've been like, he's ducking me. And people didn't even think I knew you. So now they know I know. Dieter's next, all right?
Dieter's next.
And then we're going to find Vaccaro. Do you not have to put the headset down? We don't have to drop. You going to go Ekman and drop the mic on me? Do all that? Barry Stitz over at the Curly. We're here at Pappas. We're in Parkville. I dragged him out of the city all the way out here to Parkville. We're at Taylor Avenue. Pappas has locations all over the place. They're in Cockeysville. They're up in Bel Air. They're down in Glen Burnie. The original is here in Parkville. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Gold Rush, sevens, doublers. We're giving these away. One for you. Good luck for you on
Thank
that.
You.
You're 21, right? Okay, 18. check it out. Jeannie brought some crab cakes by here. I have one more guest coming up. We're going to talk about a project up in Timonium, a light rail project that's got some controversy involved and some people. I'm trying to just shed some light on it. So a little soccer. We had John Patty by. We had Steve Elliott come by. The crab cake tour is going on hiatus for a week or two. Through the 4th of July. We will not be at Fadley's on Friday, but we would encourage you to stop down before the ballpark, get a crab cake, shrimp salad, see the brand new, beautiful Lexington Market. We'll be back there on the 12th because we're waiting for the Yankees. You still got your Yankee hat from back
With the Y on it.
With the Y on it, yeah. Well, we couldn't do real hats because we weren't licensed, right?
That's right.
My Oriole hat was orange with an O.
That's right.
Didn't even have a B on it like the like the City Connect jerseys. All right, we're back for more from Parkville. My dear friend Barry Stitz hanging out here and being a Curly. You want to sing the Curly fight song or you do not want to do that?
If I could sing, I would.
All right. You could sing here on Monday nights. They have karaoke here at Parkville Pappas. Back for more from Parkville right after this. Stay with us. We are WNSD, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.